A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's Tuesday, 8th of October. I'm Andy Brassel, she's Jules Breach, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
18 games that Spurs have lost in the last 10 months, the latest of which may well not be the most humiliating, but is without doubt humbling.
Coming up, it's a red letter weekend as Brighton and Wimbledon both win. We'll be looking in depth into the Seagulls' success. Down the south coast, Southampton are struggling. We'll be figuring out why. And Everton sinking into the bottom three. Say it ain't so. All coming up on Jules and Andy. We had quite a good weekend, didn't we?
Oh, it's just been one of those weekends that you didn't want to end. I wanted to live that Saturday for a very long time because it's not often that Brighton beat one of the big teams in the Premier League. And then it's even less often, Andy, that Wimbledon win on the same day as well. And we were in the same TV studio together.
We were. I have to say, it was quite an experience on live television. You going, you're not going to believe this, Andy. Wimbledon are one up. You're not going to believe this, Andy. They've scored again.
Honestly, every single time it came up on the Vidi printer that Wimbledon had got a goal, I had to look at you because I was in disbelief.
Yes.
So to see your face of shock, but slight relief at the same time was just keeping me amused all afternoon. But
thanks for keeping it from me when Rochdale pulled one back, by the way.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We're a team, Andy. I will never let you down. But what a day for both of us. Wimbledon and Brighton getting victories on a Saturday afternoon.
I mean, there can't be anyone out there who's expecting us not to open with this.
Exactly. I think loads of people were actually tweeting saying, I wonder what Jules and Andy are going to be talking about on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think the Marcus Force fan club have been waiting with bated breath for a couple of days. Brilliant first goal for him. But let's talk about Brighton because the boys on the Ramble did talk about more the Tottenham end of it. Of course, they gave Brighton and Aaron Connolly, they're due credit, but they understandably focused on Spurs. Let's not worry about the Spurs because, you know, obviously that result looks even worse given what happened to Bayern at the weekend, but we won't go into that. Again, we got into that on BT Sports Score, didn't we? But you went to see Graham Potter last week at the Amex and you had a bit of a chat. I mean, personally, I loved the social media picture and Potter's incredible flexibility as he bent his legs in an attempt to make you look slightly less short.
Do you know what? I always thought he was a really nice man. And then after that photo, I thought, you're even more wonderful than you originally were.
When you find out in a month's time that he's been done four sessions at the chiropractor, you'll think, what a guy. But how was the experience? You got on like a house on fire, I heard.
Oh, he's just lovely. I was expecting him to be nice. I was expecting him to be genuine and down to earth, but yeah. He was that and so much more. He's a fascinating man. He's got an incredibly unique story into coaching, but he's also super intelligent, and you can really feel that and see that in everything that he says. And he was just lovely, so humble about his success so far and his journey to the Premier League. But as I said, just so down to earth and a really nice guy. And he gave us so much time, answered everything that I had to ask. And as you can imagine, I asked a million questions.
Did you have a little notebook?
So much I did. There was so much I wanted to know about him as a person, what he's implementing at Brighton, what the kind of plan is for the club. And he gave us absolutely everything and more. Such a great guy. And I have to say, I think I was Brighton's good luck charm coming into the weekend. I'm going to take full credit for that win.
I think, yeah, you should go and interview the rest of the squad before every other televised game. That's the only way they're going to get through. Just like every time Wimbledon play, I'm going to have you four paces along the sofa from me from now on, because otherwise we're going to get relegated.
Well, funny enough, I got a tweet on Saturday after the Brighton result from Michael DeLuca, who said, "Jules, you're having the opposite effect to what Andy Brassel had during his Ramble Meets interviews. A sit-down chat with you, Brighton are 2-0 up," they were at the time, obviously ended up going on to win 3-0. He said, "Go on, Jules," with a thumbs up. So did you have quite bad luck with your Ramble Meets interviews?
For what it's worth, Paulo Sousa has since recovered. Bordeaux won 3-1 at the weekend. They're fourth place in Ligue 1. So I'm just more of a slow burn, really, Jules. That's what it's about. But yeah, let's get into a bit of what Potter has done. I mean, it's really interesting seeing what he's left behind in Östersund. I mean, they're really struggling at the moment to stay up, and you know, it's not in especially down to the coaching team, because they're suffering financial problems at the moment. I think they need £800,000 or the Swedish equivalent thereof to survive past the end of the month. So we wish them, and especially our mate David Priest, who's also a former guest on Ramble Meets, all the best as they try and keep their heads above water. But, you know, it is clear how incredibly influential he was. Obviously, you hope he's going to do the same for Brighton. I mean, you've been saying to me when we've been talking about it that in terms of the way that they play, let's forget the results for a minute, despite an excellent win against Spurs at the weekend, they're almost unrecognisable from the back end of last season.
Yeah, I think last year Brighton became one of the more predictable teams in the Premier League. You knew when you were going to play them exactly what you were going to get. And that's no kind of disrespect to the brilliant work that Chris Hughton did, because I'm a huge Chris Hughton fan, and what he did for our club was absolutely magnificent. But it became quite predictable in terms of the style of play. We were set up very defensively. It was very direct, low possession-based football. And what has amazed me and Brighton fans so far is just how quickly that has changed, with Graham Potter only coming into the club for the last few months.
Yeah.
There has been a complete change in style. We're now playing possession-based football. We're setting up with three at the back and playing wing backs, which is something we've not seen before. The style of play is completely different, and the approach is more attacking. As I said, possession-based attacking football is exciting for fans to watch, and that's what we've been seeing so far this season. Unfortunately, the results just haven't been there, but the performances have been. And that's what made the result against Tottenham that little bit more satisfying, because obviously it's always great to beat one of the so-called traditional top six in the Premier League. But to win the way we did and play the way we did off the back of what I think, and what I know a lot of other Brighton fans think, have been some really good performances, we just haven't been getting the results. I look back to the Newcastle game and I think we should have won that. I look back to the Burnley match. We conceded a late equaliser in the 90-odd minute. That was unfortunate. We had Andone sent off half an hour into the game against Southampton at home and ended up losing that game 2-0. That wasn't a fair reflection of the work that Potter's done so far this season. So for me, what was most satisfying about the win was it's all kind of come together, and now everyone can see what Brighton fans have been raving about for the last few weeks, because we saw it in the opening game of the season against Watford. And then it kind of all tailed off a little bit. We'd only scored two goals since then up until the Tottenham game. So to score three goals, get a win at home when our home form hasn't been great, it was just really good to see. And everything Graham Potter has been doing is, I think now that everyone can kind of see the change that he's made. And on top of the style of play, it's the fact that he's actually bringing players into the squad that Brighton fans have been desperate to see. Aaron Connolly getting his first Premier League start and scoring two goals. I mean, you couldn't think of a better day to do it in front of the home fans as well, because he's been someone that Brighton fans have had their eye on and have been kind of hoping will get his opportunity. And he's, you know, he's played a little bit of a part so far this season as a substitute, but on his first start in the Premier League to get two goals, he was the player of the season in the under-23s last year for Brighton. Mm. So to see him get off the mark in the Premier League on his debut, that was a really good thing to see for Brighton fans as well. And he's bringing the youth into the team as well, which is really good to see.
Yeah, and someone like Connolly looks super comfortable, excuse me, expressing himself. I mean, is that something that's more widely felt in the squad, do you think? Because, I mean, when I look back at the final months of Chris Hughton, as an outsider, look back at the final months of Chris Hughton and think, you know, has he been a bit hamstrung by a number of signings that haven't really worked? I mean, you've had Jurgen Locadia, for example, who they spent a fair whack of money on for Brighton.
£13 million, I think.
Yeah, go back out on loan to Hoffenheim. So I guess the question really would be, was Hughton hamstrung by the signings not working out, or did some of the signings not work out because of the sort of football they were playing?
It's probably a combination of both, because when you look at the players that haven't really delivered that you mentioned there, as you say, Locadia has gone out on loan. Andone, obviously, for some reason, wasn't really ticking the boxes that Potter wanted. So he's out on loan as well. I think that it's to do more so with the system that the players probably haven't really delivered. But then, because looking at what Chris Hughton did at the club, he did a lot of good, and Graham Potter wasn't shy in sort of saying that and applauding Chris Hughton for everything that he'd done in his time there. But now with the new system in place, the players look more confident. They're playing more expansive football. There's a bit more freedom as well, I think, in the way Graham Potter's style is implemented, because under Chris Hughton, it very much felt like there was a plan A, and that was it.
Yeah.
And that's how we played, which was great because it kept us in the Premier League for 2 years. Mm. But with Graham Potter's style, what I think is really interesting and something that we're not used to seeing is that there's this fluidity, there's this flexibility that he can actually change things up. We saw it in the Burnley game earlier in the season where he started in a certain way. It wasn't working out, so he changed it. Graham Potter seems to have not just a plan A and a plan B, but a plan C and a plan D as well.
Yeah.
There's that flexibility in his tactics and in the formations he's played. We've seen all sorts of different formations already this season. He's reverted to a back four at times. Then he's gone with his favoured back three with wing backs. And having that different flexibility probably suits the players, because they will all feel at some stage, oh, well, I suit that formation better and I suit that one better. Because on Saturday against Tottenham, we played two up top with Connolly and Morpay starting together. And that was the perfect game plan against a Tottenham side who were low on confidence.
Well, it really stopped them settling, didn't it? Especially the amount of work that Morpay and Connolly got through. But it was interesting when you were talking about them changing the way they played and Potter having that flexibility. I mean, people were saying Brighton played 4-4-2 on Saturday, but actually it was more a 4-2-2-2, which the only team that I can think of that plays that regularly really are Leipzig. And it really works for them. And, you know, there's a great energy to the way they play. So I wonder if you thought, because Potter has like different reference points to other English coaches in the division, because he's done most of his coaching outside the UK, or most of his senior coaching outside the UK, it enables him to bring a fresh set of ideas to the table, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And having that fresh set of eyes on a club we kind of needed that. It felt like Brighton needed a bit of a revamp at the tail end of last season. Fans were getting restless, and even though, you know, we were just picking up, we were scraping draws and we were getting through games, that's not exciting for fans. Yes, of course, the main aim for Brighton is to stay in the Premier League. That's what we want. Of course it is. And it may come to a point where, under this new style of Graham Potter, maybe we don't get the results. And maybe that means dropping down to then come back up eventually.
Yeah.
I think the fans are almost accepting of it because match days are exciting for us again now.
Well, we talked about that, didn't we, a while back when we were talking about Palace and these teams kind of stuck in the middle. There's a ceiling, there's nowhere really to go up. And, you know, once you stay up, what else is there to do?
Mm.
I think it can be underrated that football's meant to be an experience of enjoyment, isn't it? Watching football is meant to be an experience of enjoyment. And fresh ideas definitely help that, don't they?
They do. And seeing younger players coming into the squad as well, especially when it's homegrown talent. You know, I know Solly March was in the team a lot the last year and he's suffered a little bit with injuries this year as well. So he's been in and out. But seeing players like him come through, obviously Lewis Dunk, he's one of our own and always will be. And he was brilliant against Tottenham, even though, you know, he didn't have as much to do as he may have expected against a usual good Tottenham side. But, you know, when you see younger players like Alzate coming through and Aaron Connolly, who we've already mentioned, that's really refreshing to see as well. And you almost feel that with everything Graham Potter's doing, it's not just a, right, we're desperate for results, let's go out and get them. This is, you can see that there's a plan there. You can see that there's not just a short-term plan of, right, we want to stay in the Premier League. Of course we want to stay in the Premier League. But there's more of a medium to long-term plan, which has been put in place by our technical director, Dan Ashworth, who did a fascinating interview on BT Sport on Saturday lunchtime before the match, just talking about how important it is to have someone like that in place that has a medium to a long-term plan for the club right from the top, right through to the women's team and to the unders and to the younger age groups and the academy.
A philosophy that pervades throughout the club.
Yeah, and Dan Ashworth says that getting a coach in like Graham Potter, someone like him with the style that he has and the approach he has, was so important to the club. That's what they needed at the time, and that's why he was appointed.
Yeah, and coming from a background, I suppose, in the case of Graham Potter, where he's not threatened by a director of football, because a lot of coaches, there's a lot of misunderstanding of the role, isn't there, in British football especially. And I think a lot of coaches, a lot of managers, because they're called managers rather than head coaches, they're kind of threatened by that. They feel it steps on their toes a little bit. I think with the amount of money that is involved in the modern game, there's no way you can say to a manager, right, here you go, here's the money, reinforce the team. Because managers or head coaches, they're going to think short term. They're going to think looking after their jobs. They can't see the bigger picture for the club. And what happens if that manager stroke head coach doesn't get the results and you have to fire him 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the line? Well, you're left with a load of players who might not suit the next coach. I think if you've got a technical director or a sporting director who sets the tone, who has the philosophy of the club in hand, and, you know, that's where it worked really well for other medium-sized clubs like Swansea and Southampton before they had a big rethink and gone a bit awry. We'll talk about Southampton in a minute. That is the only effective way of managing things. What is something that Watford have done to in a slightly different way, isn't it? Because the head coach has not been the guy who's led the project. He's just someone else who works for the club. Now, I'm not saying Graham Potter's that, but you can't rely on any one manager or head coach because, as you say, when results turn, things change so quickly.
One of the interesting things Dan Ashworth said in that interview was he kind of alluded to the fact that he wasn't worried about Brighton getting impatient with Potter and having to sack him because results weren't there. He was more worried about us going on a really good run, winning 10 on the trot, and someone else coming in and
nicking him
and poaching Graham Potter.
Well, basically, that's what happened to Swansea to an extent, wasn't it? Because with diminished resources there, he caught the eye to an extent, and, you know, the fans really liked him as well. That Brighton, when they had a gap to fill, just came and took him away, didn't they?
And when I spoke to Graham in the week last week before the match, he said to me that, you know, part of his move from Sweden back to Swansea and then from Swansea to Brighton, that all happened quite organically and there was no real master plan there. This was just he took the job in Sweden at Östersund at the time because there wasn't really anything else. He knew he wasn't going to get a job in England.
And I mean, in a way, he's kind of following in the footsteps of Roy Hodgson 30 years on, isn't he?
Yeah, it's amazing what his pathway has been so far. And he said, you know, the reason he left Östersund is because he knew he wasn't going to get sacked. He was doing so well there that he thought, well, I need a new challenge. Yeah. They're not going to sack me. What I've done here is brilliant. I've revolutionised the club. It's now time. Those weren't his words. That's what I'm saying, by the way. it's now time for me to go and take on a new challenge, which for him was a big risk because moving into English football, where, you know, the lifespan of a manager is what, roughly about 14 months, I think, on average. You know, that's quite a long time to be given in terms of a manager in English football. He knew that he was putting himself at risk to get sacked from a job, but he went to Swansea. He did great things there. Brighton obviously had a plan in place, particularly with the amount of money that Tony Bloom has invested in the academy. The facilities down there are phenomenal. They're now building something really special down there, and we're going to see a lot more younger players coming through the ranks that we've already seen this season, and that's going to continue growing and growing. And they see Graham Potter as the perfect fit to keep that plan going, if that makes sense.
It's funny, when you talk about that continuity, I can't, and that sort of management from upstairs, I can't help thinking of Manchester United because, you know, we talked about them obviously on last week's show, and thanks for all your feedback during the show through Twitter especially. That was really helpful and we really enjoyed that. Of course, you can get involved emailing julesandandy@footballrambledaily.com and you can tweet us @JulesBreach @AndyBrassel, of course. But with the whole Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thing, it's something that I think Luke touched on in the Ramble yesterday, where he was saying, like, if you remove Solskjaer, like, if you can't bring in a coach or manager that's going to make it all right. Maybe
there's no quick fix there, is there?
No, there's not. And I know that's not really what people want to hear, but until they get their act together upstairs, it can't change that much on the pitch, I don't think.
No, it can't. And I think when you look back at what we've been discussing with the positivity with Brighton and hopefully now...
Yeah, sorry, I took it away from Brighton for a second.
Bringing it back around. I'm going to make the most of this. No, I just wanted to say that hopefully now other fans of other clubs and other teams in the Premier League will look at what Brighton have done and will see us in a positive light because... You know, we kind of all take the mickey, Brighton fans, on Twitter with the hashtag teams like Brighton, because it's a phrase that people use all the time. But we're now seeing ourselves as different because we now have a long-term plan at the club.
Yes.
And we're starting to see the success of it already in such a short space of time, which I think is a really exciting place to be. Before I get too carried away, we can move on if you want to.
Well, do you know, I was just wanting to creep a little further along the South Coast. And of course, Chelsea again impressing in winning at Southampton at the weekend.
They were good. They're clinical, aren't they, in front of goal?
Yeah, I'm very much enjoying Mason Mount generally at the moment. I enjoyed his cupping his hands around his ears particularly. I think there's room for that amount of cheekiness.
I enjoyed it as well because he was in my fantasy team and I was desperate for points. It's been the worst week of the season for my fantasy team.
Really?
Yeah, I was 12K in the world out of nearly 7 million players last week. This week I've dropped to, it's still a really good rank, but I'm over 40K now, which is crazy that you can drop that much in 1 week just from, it was just a shambles, Andy.
I need to check where I am globally in the UEFA Champions League one. Because I had a really good week last week because not only did Cristiano Ronaldo do well, I mean, you know, you got to make him captain and leave him in there. But Ashraf Hakimi of Dortmund, who's classified as a defender but played further up, scored 2 at Slavia Prague and kept a clean sheet. Now that is a good week.
You love those players. They're the ones you want in your team. But
absolutely.
Back to Chelsea though. They were brilliant, weren't they?
You were saying to me how good Willian was. And I agree. That's something I've been thinking in recent weeks particularly. That if you look at the Wolves performance where they went away and it really clicked, and Wolves had that kind of experimental backline with Jesus Vallejo in, and it didn't really work at all. I'm sure he'll settle and be a good player for them. But when Rudiger and Willian came back in, he thought, right, the adults are home.
Yeah.
We're not having fish fingers and chips tonight. We're going to spend some time and make a paella. It felt like that, didn't it?
What's great about Chelsea that I think we're finally starting to see, because I think we've spoken so much for these first 7-8 weeks of the season about
the Littlands,
the young players, and how great it is to see them all coming through and performing in the Premier League, and what wonderful work Frank Lampard has done. And because of that, we've sort of forgotten to mention the other players in the team. And when you looked at Chelsea's squad on Sunday, there's quite a lot of depth in that squad. You look at Hudson-Odoi, who's now back from injury, who started for the first time in that game. He is going to be brilliant for the rest of the season if he can keep himself fit. And then Willian, back to him, I thought his work rate in that game was phenomenal. He did not stop. And when you've got a player like that in your team, they are so valuable. He was one end of the pitch, right down to the other, winning the ball back for his team and then putting it into a good area to create another chance for a goal.
He's an absolute leader.
Yeah.
And sorry, Tottenham fans, to remind you of this after this dreadful week, to think he was almost a Tottenham player.
You're making it worse for them, Andy. They've suffered enough at the hands of Brighton. Brighton Munich, as some were calling them on Saturday. I thought that Chelsea were brilliant. But on Southampton, I mean, they didn't make it hard for Chelsea, did they?
They were terrible. I think you can be so locked into the Chelsea story that you can overlook how awful Southampton were. If I'm a Southampton fan, I'm a little bit worried at the moment, because Hasenhüttl did a really terrific job with, in my opinion, not incredible squad in the back end of last season.
And tough circumstances when he came in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very easy to forget, I think, when you look at the final table, how close they were to going down. At one point, they looked absolutely doomed. And he really helped them out there. And, you know, he is a coach, I think, who improves individual players, who can lift them collectively as well. So it was a bit concerning to hear him say after the game, we're a long way from the sort of level that we need to be to produce results. We're not even close to that at the moment. And I kind of wonder, like, I don't think he's about to get fired or anything, but it's kind of risky, isn't it, saying that just before the international break when, you know, trigger fingers start to get twitchy in boardrooms. I wonder if it's kind of a challenge to those players to say, look, we've got a couple of weeks now. Let's have a rethink, because that just wasn't good enough.
One of the other interesting quotes he said in his post-match interview was, we were too slow in our minds. Slow on the ball, but too slow in our minds, which I thought was quite interesting. I don't know whether it's a slight language barrier, so the translation isn't exact, but it's, I just feel that him saying the players were too slow in their minds, it's like he's almost, in my mind, suggesting that they weren't putting forward the plan and the tactics and the approach that he wanted.
Did you say that? See the way he reacted after Conte's goal? He was absolutely doing his nut on the line and
really?
and making a point to his coaching staff. I don't know if he felt they should have retrieved the ball earlier, retrieved their shape earlier, or just closed Conte a little bit quicker, because in the end the defender came in and just managed to get a little deflection on it, which obviously took it in. But I kind of look at that squad as well, and I don't think it's fantastic. I know they went out and bought some players this summer, but what they did was not by any means a spree by current Premier League standards. And I think they needed more reinforcement than they actually got. I mean, I think, of course, they realised they needed a little more up front to join Danny Ings. Shay Adams, it hasn't really worked out so far.
No, I feel for Shay, actually.
Yeah, well, that's not to say it won't work.
Yeah.
But I think slinging him in every game and making him sort of learn on the job at the time when they really need him to produce is a bit much. I kind of felt that without Sofiane Boufal, who is a player that could easily have gone this summer, I don't really feel as if they've got that person to pick the lock in the middle of the park behind the forwards as well. And then you look at some of the other players they've bought, and I'm thinking particularly of Yannick Vestergaard, who was a terrific defender in the Bundesliga, one of the absolute best. And he's really struggled to settle and produce on a regular basis as well. It's a concern.
Yeah, it is. And I thought tactically, when the team news came out and you saw the formation and how they set up Southampton, it was interesting because he went with a slightly more defensive approach, because we've seen them play earlier on in the season with a bit more of a kind of 3-5-2 formation at times. But he went back to a four at the back, I assume, preparing for Chelsea's attack because they've been so potent. But it just didn't work for them at all. They didn't look solid at the back in the slightest. In fact, they looked the complete opposite of that. It looked quite flaky.
Yeah, they were really porous. And, you know, that must have been hugely disappointing for him. But they've got some big games coming up. I think they play Wolves straight after the break. They've got City somewhere down the line in the next three or four games as well. And
it's a tough run, isn't it, coming up?
Yeah.
Wolves away, Leicester at home, Manchester City away. Everyone can win at the Etihad now, though. Everton at home, who we're going to talk about in a moment. And then Arsenal. Those next six, that's a tough run of fixtures for Southampton. And you're looking at that wondering where they're going to get their next win from.
On the plus side, it does mean Brighton Kings of the South Coast.
Whee!
They're different under Graham Potter, but this is still a side that Spurs will feel they should be able to overcome, even on the road, where their wait for a Premier League win goes on and on and on.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I tell you what, there's still a lot of Ramble Live action this coming week. I mean, they were in your manor last week, weren't they?
I wish I could have gone to that show. They were in Brighton on Sunday. And as we mentioned on last week's Ramble, that we both went to London show. So yeah. I didn't get to go down to the Theatre Royal in Brighton. But
you could have kept Pete on the straight and narrow. Why didn't you say he ended up quite a long way from the venue at some
honestly,
horrible takeaway?
I was listening to yesterday's Ramble and Pete saying that he ended up in Cheeky Chicken. Now, I know all of the chicken joints around Brighton, and I can tell you that that is not in the top 10. It's not one of the best ones, Pete. So next time I'll have to take you to a classier chicken place.
He should have hit you up for tips.
He should have done. But I'm sure it was a great show, and there's still more shows around for you guys to get to. Bournemouth on Thursday, sold out at Shepherd's Bush on Friday. Is that where you went to the Shepherd's Bush one, didn't you? Oh, no, Hackney you went to.
I went to Hackney. Yeah. Strictly East London.
There you go. But yes, you got to get to a show that it's super funny. Exactly what you'd expect from the boys. So if you haven't got tickets yet,
ramblelive.com. Well, let's hope they do better on the South Coast than Pete did last weekend.
Well, it's actually perfect timing that they did the show in Brighton after Brighton's big win. Have I mentioned that yet? I don't know if I've mentioned that we beat Spurs.
I don't think so. Should we do a section on that now?
Let's do it.
No, probably, just to make sure. We've had some great feedback, actually, from last week. Thanks for all your tweets and emails. Of course, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. We've had quite a few get in touch about the Newcastle United section. I'd like to think, in a way, we inspired them to beating Manchester United on Sunday.
It's all about us, Andy.
Nothing to do with the Longstaff brothers.
How good was their interview, though, Matty and Sean? That was great.
That was
it's
wonderful.
What you love to see, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Just brings you back down to earth with, you know, we often in this day and age like to think of footballers as different types of human, like they're not normal human beings. Yes. And when you saw that interview, you just thought, how lovely is that? And how nice for their family as well.
Do you reckon they got a Deliveroo to mum and dad's on Sunday night?
Don't get me started on Deliveroo. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of wine, beer, a lot of celebrating, and hopefully a good takeaway on their hands that night.
Well, yeah, we had a lot of people get in touch anyway after the Newcastle United stuff last week. Mark Blackford's been in touch. So's Nick Halbert. And there's some concern about some of the signings, but hopefully, especially from Nick, but hopefully they'll be cheered up by that result. Doesn't make everything all right, of course, but as you were saying at the weekend, there's nothing quite like your team winning, as the two of us can tell you.
Look at us smiling at each other.
Forget all the rank bits in between. But let's go back to the rank bits. Let's go to Everton.
The rank bits? Yeah, bottom three, Everton. How did that happen?
How on earth did that happen? I mean, we were talking about this with Harry Redknapp at the weekend, weren't we? Because he was watching Burnley versus Everton. I seem to think he was distinctly unimpressed.
He wasn't enjoying it. Every time I went and asked him, you know, what's going on in the game, Harry, any updates? Does anyone look like scoring? It was just, I was greeted by kind of groans every time of, you know, there's not much happening in this game. And four losses in a row in the Premier League now for Everton, and they sit in the bottom three on just 7 points after eight matches, which for me feels a bit bizarre because they started the season with two clean sheets. They were one of the teams that we were talking about right here on Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com as one of the teams that could potentially break into the top six. They looked like one of the teams better equipped to break into the top six this season. And now here we are 8 weeks later, talking about them being in the bottom three. And I'm not sure where it's all gone wrong.
Before we get too further into it, Jules, does Marco Silva survive the international break?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think he does.
Sure?
I think he survives. I think that nowadays, people are too quick to pull the trigger and blame the manager for everything. And
well, that's because you can't like sack 15 players, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
But
and there's so much money riding on it. I mean, we've seen quite a lot of three manager seasons in the last couple of years. I mean, that's always a dreadful sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, getting through two is bad enough, but three is a choker. And you know, when we've seen Swansea are a good example of that in recent seasons, you know, when it didn't really work out for Bob Bradley. So you know, they need to come to some sort of conclusion about what they're going to do. But something that Harry was pointing out at the weekend, there's a lot of talent on the books, there's a lot of potential at the club. You know, they're very well supported. Goodison Park's one of the more atmospheric grounds in the Premier League. But what are they actually trying to do? What are they doing with that talent? How do they play?
Yeah.
I don't feel entirely clear on any of those things, to be perfectly honest.
There seems to be a lack of identity, is I think the conclusion we came to on Saturday after watching them play Burnley, that the team don't seem to be playing in any sort of particular style. It's just lacking a bit of substance, because as you say, there are some really good players in that squad and there are good players on the bench as well. And Moise Kean is one of those who we discussed on Saturday.
Yeah, we did. I mean, like, this is a guy who was good enough to start for Juventus last season and was terrific in consistently starting for Juventus last season, especially when Cristiano Ronaldo was unavailable. And I understand he's adapting to a new league. It's a league that he is made for in terms of his physique. His quality is in absolutely no doubt whatsoever. And yet, here he is sitting on the bench at Burnley and sent on to sort of save it with 15 minutes left. I mean, have they really got a better option to start the game?
I don't understand how you can expect from a young player who's new to the Premier League to shove him on for the last 15 minutes of a game and expect to see magic.
He's going to get used to it by playing.
He needs to start matches. And we understood at the start of the season him not coming straight into the starting 11 for Everton. And, you know, maybe he needed a bit of time, you know, 2-3 games to sort of come on as a substitute, get used to the kind of intensity and the pace of the Premier League and give him a little bit of time. But the minute you saw him get his first start, you then expected him to start every game after that.
Yes.
And that's not happened. And I don't understand why. I'm wondering whether Marco Silva has seen something in training that we're not seeing, or whether he doesn't fit whatever plan he has. I'm not really sure what the case is, because he, to me, looks like the best forward in that team that should be starting every week.
Yeah.
On paper.
And I think elsewhere in the team, you've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, who is struggling a little bit at the moment, and he's meant to be a creative fulcrum. Andre Gomes didn't start this weekend as well. I would
Is
say
he
that
fit now. Was he injured for a bit?
I think so. Mm. Yeah. But you know, it did well on loan, and it would be good to see more of him. And also, you know, you look at the other players they brought in. Djibril Sidibe, who came from Monaco with a good reputation, who's been getting over injury problems of himself, which kind of blighted his World Cup in 2018, because he would have been the starting fullback ahead of Benjamin Pavard if he'd have been fit for the World Cup. Whereas I understand Seamus Coleman is very, very reliable for them. I would say that the silver lining to the cloud of him getting sent off at Burnley and suspended,
like that pun,
is the fact that thank you is the fact that Sidibe will actually get to play now, because again, he's someone who needs matches to get back to his best form. And this was a guy who a year and a half ago, Atletico Madrid were trying to get in for 40, 50 million. You know, there's no doubt that he's an absolutely top-class player. So, you know, there's so much talent around there that just seems to be either being underutilised or not utilised in the correct fashion at the moment. I think Bernard's another big one. You know, it's clear that he's got ability, he's got spark. He only ever seems to be really bit part for Everton. And bear in mind that when he was on a freebie from Shakhtar Donetsk, he was someone who was highly coveted all across Europe. He took his time making a decision, just because he likes to take his time making a decision. I think when he signed for Shakhtar, he spent 2 weeks weighing it up. He got his mum and dad to have a look around Donetsk with him and all the rest of it. So he likes to consider things. I wonder what he thinks now, what he thinks of what was sold to him and what he's actually got. I'm not saying he's separate from that, of course. Him and his investment in training and matches is very much part of the equation, but it can't have worked out as he thought it would. And you could say that's kind of Everton in microcosm, really.
Well, how worried are you about Everton? Because when you look at their squad, you've got England's first choice goalkeeper in there. You've got quality players that we've already mentioned. You know, Luca Dean, who I think is one of the best left-backs in the league.
Yeah.
Yerry Mina at the back, who I think is an excellent centre-back alongside Keane. And then Sigurdsson, Richarlison, Iwobi. We talked about Moise Kean already.
So
these are players where surely they can't Everton can't go down.
Well, you wouldn't think.
Do you think they could?
You wouldn't think so. I think the issue is less them potentially going down and more throwing away their chance of being able to push towards a European spot this season, which, you know, should be within their grasp and should be foremost in their minds, because it's been a while since Everton have been in Europe on a regular basis now. And the sort of investment that they've made in the squad shows that only that will be acceptable. But I think some of it does have to be either a coaching issue or certainly a, you know, everyone being on the same page issue. Because, you know, you pointed out about Michael Keane, his form's been a bit up and down, and Yerry Mina. How can you have two centre-backs like that and physicality elsewhere in the team and yet concede more goals at set-pieces than anyone else? I just don't get that. That has got to be a coaching or communication issue.
It has to be. And Harry Redknapp was just raging about that on Saturday as well. He was saying, how on earth are they so bad at set pieces? The goal they conceded, I mean, Hendrick was completely unmarked. Mm. Completely unmarked at the back post.
And he's not one of Burnley's giants, is he?
No, he's not. And when you know that you've conceded the most goals from set pieces coming into the game, surely that is the number one thing you're working on in training all week, is right, at least let's go into this game against a team, Burnley, who are particularly good at set pieces. Surely all week that would have been what Marco Silva and the team would have been working on in training. So to come into the game and concede a goal from a set piece, from a corner, from a ball that's whipped completely across the face of goal and to the back post to a man completely unmarked, that's not good enough, especially for Everton, who, as you say, should be pushing for a European place. I know it's early in the season. We've only had 8 games, so we don't want to kind of jump to conclusions here, but I can't see them getting a European place now, the way they've started, way they're playing.
Something has to change pretty quickly. And you look at their games after the break, home to West Ham, which is big because West Ham are aiming for the same sort of area as them, but with a big head start.
And
from,
by the way,
from where they are at the moment,
they've looked 10 times better than Everton.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Despite the loss to Palace at the weekend, another good win on the road for Palace. Then Everton go to Brighton.
I mean, we'll win that easy, obviously.
Yeah, given. and then they've got Watford and Spurs at home. I mean, certainly when you talk about West Ham, Brighton, Watford, I mean, they need some points out of that lot, don't they?
Well, ordinarily, Everton, looking at those three fixtures, you'd assume that they'd win all three of those. Mm. But the way they're playing and the way West Ham and Brighton are playing at the moment, you'd look at the next two games and think perhaps they might come away with nothing from those two matches. And then where does that then leave this Everton team, and the pressure on Marco Silva will just continue to build? I don't like, you know, speculating about managers being sacked, because I think it's unfair, especially this early in the season. But you can feel that there is pressure on him at the moment.
Yeah, there is. And actually, I wonder where the Watford game sits at the end of the month, because obviously that's an EFL Cup game. I mean, Everton are one of those clubs, especially with their current difficulties in the league, that they really need to be pushing for a cup competition, don't they? I mean, you know, you saw the fallout when Tottenham went out of the EFL Cup to Colchester, which, to an extent, when you're a team that's got to the final of the Champions League and is looking, well, is a regular in the top 3 or 4 of the Premier League, it's disappointing. But it should be anecdotal in the context of bigger aims. I'm not sure you can say that for Everton.
No.
Certainly not yet. I mean, what would winning the EFL Cup do for them? That would be a great thing for them, wouldn't it?
Well, whenever you go on a good cup run, it's about confidence in the team, particularly when morale is low, confidence is low. Just having a bit of a boost, getting a win and knowing that you could potentially, in a cup competition like the EFL Cup, a team like Everton should be going quite the distance in those cup competitions and having a really decent chance and shot at winning silverware. And that's something that fans want to see. And when the fans are behind you, the fans are turning up week in, week out to support you, and you've got something to cheer about, that can just give you a bit of a lift that can take you into that next Premier League game to give you that extra bit to get that win and grind that result out. And I think that cup competitions are actually highly underrated especially something
like yeah,
they are because it means a lot to the fans and also to the confidence of the players and to give them that momentum for their next game.
Do you think sometimes we can be a bit complicit in that as fans? I mean, I'm not saying all fans by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, I'd like to think as fans, a cup run is a big deal to us. But we spend more time than we used to talking about the financial implications of staying up or getting in the Champions League or whatever, don't we?
Yeah, and I know from last year, from getting to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, that was, for me, one of my best experiences as a Brighton fan, other than promotion to the Premier League. It was amazing. And I know we went out with a bit of a whimper against Manchester City.
We did better than Watford, didn't you?
We did. And it's just, you know, those days out for fans and for the players, they'll remember that for the rest of their lives. Mm. They might not remember, oh, we finished 17th in the league that year. You know, like, I think that having those days out and those moments, those special achievements, I think it is an achievement to get to the semi-finals of the FA Cup on many levels. And, you know, I think for Everton, it could be, like you say, something for them to focus on that might just give them a bit of a lift in the Premier League as well and see them climb up the table to where they should be.
You've just made me drift off and think about the...
Have I put you to sleep?
No, just you've just made me think about Wimbledon beating West Ham in the FA Cup last season, which was wonderful. Because you made me think about it earlier when you were saying about how you'd watched the Brighton Spurs game from the weekend. What, how many times?
Well, I watched it live at the time in the studios, but because I was working, I was kind of like...
You got half an eye on it.
Yeah, I had one eye on the telly. Yes, I was watching a bit of it and then I was doing a bit of work on my laptop. And then obviously I wanted to watch it properly when I got home. So I'd recorded it anyway. So I then got home, I watched the full 90 minutes again and then watched Match of the Day as well to see the highlights again and to see what Gary and the boys had to say on Match of the Day. I was annoyed that we weren't first game up in the running order.
What was first game up in the running order?
Was it the Liverpool game?
Yeah, it must have been. It never would have been if it hadn't have been for that last minute goal.
There you go. I think we might have been third. Yeah, because then the Norwich Villa game was second and then the Brighton win was third.
I'm not
joking. I genuinely had my phone out because I was going to post on my Instagram story. I was going to take a photo and go, here we are, first on the running order, and then we were third. I was like, I'll put the phone down then.
I'm Lee Sharp. She's Andrei Kanchelskis. Are you set?
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.